Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you on this Wednesday, the 6th of July. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, tight security as Muslims in Cameroon mark the end of Ramadan.
We thank God that we finished the Ramadan in good health. I asked the family to prepare many meals. So we invite all Cameroonian, Christian, Muslims, anybody can come.
And a cleric in Zimbabwe has called on Zimbabweans to stay at home today in protest at the government's handling of the economy.
The response has been extremely outstanding. We believe that we will be able to shut down the entire country.
We will also be hearing about a nationwide teachers' strike in Malawi. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We begin in Zimbabwe, where a cleric has called on Zimbabweans to stay at home today in protest at the current economic situation in the country and the hardships people are facing. Pastor Evan Mawarira launched his appeal on social media through his popular movement, This Flag. He wants to help Zimbabwe out of its current difficulties. Before we went on the air, I asked him via Skype what the response had been to his call so far.
The response has been extremely outstanding in terms of people that are in solidarity with this action that we are taking. So we believe that we will be able to shut down the entire country.
But, I mean, to shut down the whole country, I mean, that's quite a tall order. And the government still has a lot of supporters in Zimbabwe, doesn't it?
I think what we are pushing for is that these are citizens that are identifying with the hardships we're facing. Nobody is exempt from the shortages of cash. Nobody is exempt from a dilapidated health services sector. No one is exempt from the corruption that has brought our country to the knees, the missing $15 billion. So in terms of government support, I don't think there is any at all because everyone is absolutely affected.
So what in concrete terms do you hope to achieve?
One of the most important things that we are achieving with this campaign is the ability of citizens to speak out. You know, Zimbabweans have not been able to speak out against almost anything that is related with government or politics because of fear. In times past, people have been beaten, people have been jailed, and some people have even been abducted for taking certain stands. So the first thing that is a victory for us here is citizens standing up to speak, citizens standing up to take action. So that's victory number one. Victory number two in terms of what we want to achieve with this is to send a message to government that the citizens of Zimbabwe are not asleep. We are awake. We must be consulted when government is beginning to implement or formulate certain policy.
Essentially, what you're calling for is a general strike. Has there been any response from the authorities to that?
At this point, we haven't had any direct response. And again, for us, this is part of what concerns us about our government. They either don't want to respond or don't seem to know how to respond. The only responses we have seen to the calling of the strike and to the calling of protest action is the arrests and the threats by the police. This began to happen yesterday because already sporadic protests are taking place across the country, from different sectors. And these are spontaneous protests that are taking place. And of course, there was a heavy-handedness of the police. And of course, we understand that a statement was issued by the police. And so they haven't responded. They haven't said anything, concerning this. But we are going ahead. It's not about their response. It's not about what the government thinks about our strike action. It's not about what their thoughts are. We are not concerned about that. This is our own move as citizens to say enough is enough and we want you to listen.
Do you think Zimbabwe can solve its problems on social media?
I think it's a good starting point. The way we started with this, the This Flag campaign and This Flag movement on social media, it began, with one video, which spiraled into a conversation amongst a group of people and then eventually became, a movement as it is right now. So we can't solve it all on social media. This is why we are now starting to move off social media, or should we say we're starting to formulate on-the-ground activity, keeping social media for coordination, keeping social media for mobilization.
Zimbabwean cleric Evan Mawarira. Meanwhile, our correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri, has been asking ordinary Zimbabweans whether they will heed the pastor's call to stay at home.
I think we are going to join also. We hope the government is going to listen to our voices.
There is so much uncertainty in our country right now, so we are closely monitoring the situation. But I can tell you that we are anticipating that tomorrow every Zimbabwean, each and every Zimbabwean is going to come together and stay away from work, because we want to show the government that we are tired.
As a safety measure, personally, I'm just going to try and make it. If I'm victimized along the way, that is going to leave me with no option but actually to join in solidarity with everyone else.
I'm just going to stay home because really I don't want to be at risk. You know how things are. If only it was back then, we knew Zimbabwean people did not have the courage to do what they talk about. But then now with the recent demonstrations, I can see people are really serious. So I would rather stay home and see the situation. Then I'll move out when I know it's safe.
A sample of public opinion in Zimbabwe, and those Zimbabweans were talking to DW's Privilege Mushaniri. Pursuing the story still further, are Zimbabweans now more willing to openly criticise the regime of President Robert Mugabe than they were, say, 12 months ago? I put that question to Liesel Lofordran, a consultant with the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria.
I think so. If we look at events in the last couple of years, there has been a hesitancy because I think of the severe crackdown against any opposition, especially during the 2008 elections and the bloodbath that really in the run-up to those elections. I think many Zimbabweans have also left the country. So, but now because of the non-payment of salaries and the severe economic crisis, people are just fed up.
How do you think the government is coping with this public pressure, this public unrest?
The government seems to be really struggling, mostly focusing on its succession battle, almost absent when it comes to the issues at hand. The government is trying to find some short-term solutions to the cash crunch. We know they're applied for new IMF loans and the finance minister is traveling to London, etc. But when it comes to the deeper issues and the political freedoms, it seems as if at least the ruling ZANU-PF is caught up in its own succession battles.
You mentioned that the government is short of money. How desperate is the state of Zimbabwe's public finances?
Very desperate. I mean, for a government to accept that salaries won't be paid, and especially when it comes to the military, that's very important. We saw now at the end of June, the payments were staggered. I'm not even sure everybody have received their salaries. So the US dollar is the currency being used in Zimbabwe, and that has now run out, really. The country doesn't have more foreign exchange, and hence these bans on imports from South Africa. I don't think, it's a sign probably that the government doesn't want money to leave the country.
But salaries are getting paid eventually. Where is the money coming from?
Yes, I think that is the million-dollar question. In these discussions around the IMF loan, there's been a new re-engagement by the IMF in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe first has to clear its debts, and there were talk of a cash injection from some other countries. The AFDB is the African Development Bank, is also helping Zimbabwe. It's not clear how it's going to first of all pay off the debt and then to be able to get a new cash injection from the IMF, which some international partners of Zimbabwe are trying to lobby for.
So you can see Zimbabwe extricating itself from this crisis in the medium term?
I mean, in the very short term, the government might be able to pay salaries. But as one of the researchers told me, it's kicking the ball just further along the road. But it's a question of weeks or months, but more.
To what extent does ZANU-PF's hold on power depend on the government's ability to pay civil servants and members of the armed forces on time?
We know that ZANU-PF's hold on power is still pretty firm because there aren't any other alternatives.
Liesel-Lo Fordran, a consultant with the Institute for Security Studies in Pretoria.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Today, Muslims are celebrating Eid al-Sidra, the festival that marks the end of Ramadan. In Cameroon, the authorities have stepped up security in a bid to prevent any further suicide bombings, which have already punctuated the month of fasting. Mosques and venues where young people gather have already been targeted by the suicide bombers. Maki Kinseka reports from Yaounde.
As Muslims celebrate Eid al-Fitr, authorities in the north of the country have sealed borders in Boko Haram-troubled spots. These are mainly at the border with Nigeria. Gatherings out of mosques have been prohibited while the military has been deployed to guard prayer grounds. Nevertheless, Muslims are busy preparing for the moment. I visited a Tudi market in Yaounde. It is unusually very full the day before the Muslim feast that ends the 30-day period of Ramadan. 31-year-old butcher Jibril Muhammad says he is left only with 7 kilograms from the 250 kilograms of beef he took to the market. On ordinary days, he sells barely 100.
We are having good sales as many women are coming to buy meat. I brought a whole cow to the market and what is remaining is this little quantity that you see behind me. Women are buying to prepare the end of Ramadan feast.
Housewife Ajaratu Ibrahim says she got to the market late just to discover that most of the goods she needed had been sold out.
There are no goods in the markets. There are no vegetables in the markets. Plantains are now very expensive. Banana is not available, and cocoyam is exceedingly expensive. There are no potatoes, but there is a little bit of palm oil and olives.
Many households are set for the feast. 13-year-old Raisa Bakari says her parents bought a number of dresses for all of her four siblings.
I thought about three dresses, three shoes, and he gave me money to do my hair. In the morning, I will stay at home to help my mother with the household chores. And then I will go out to enjoy myself. All the people I know are preparing like me.
I also met 32-year-old Ajaratu Bobo preparing to receive a few friends in her one-bedroom apartment. She tells me her menu.
Many things. Plantain, rice, meat, fish, and Irish potato. Chicken is rare at the moment in the market because of the spread of bird flu. But I will invite my friends Fadimatu, Aisha, Aisatu, and Amira for a party, and it will be open for everybody.
In mosques like here at Etudi, faithful like businessman Bobo Umaru are busy praying.
We thank God that we finished the Ramadan in good health. I asked the family to prepare many meals. So we invite friends, colleagues, and neighbors. We invite all Cameroonian, Christian, Muslims. Anybody can come without invitation.
And that report was compiled by Maki Kinseka in Yaounde.
Behind the headlines.
Ethiopia is facing its worst drought in decades and has been forced to import food aid to tackle shortages affecting at least 10 million people. This has meant extra ships docking at the already busy port of Djibouti. The extra cargo has led to delays, even though dockside workers toil hard to unload the ships under the Horn of Africa sun. From Djibouti, James Jeffrey sent us this report.
In the middle of a blistering June afternoon beside the busy docks of Djibouti port, bags of wheat speed down multiple conveyor belts to be heaved onto trucks. Once loaded, trucks set off westwards toward Ethiopia, carrying food aid to help with its worst drought in decades. But despite the hive of activity and the large number of workers, the ships aren't being unloaded fast enough. At the end of June, 16 ships remained at anchorage waiting to unload about 609,000 metric tons of wheat, barley, sorghum and fertilizer, according to the port's website. Abubakar Omar, chairman and CEO of Djibouti Ports and Free Zones Authority, explains the tricky situation.
The situation has improved to some extent, but still we have a lot of ships carrying humanitarian cargo and also fertilizer, although the fertilizer now is going down because it's not the season. Because we have the fertilizers and the aid cargo at the same time. And which one we have to give the priority was really very challenging to decide, because if you give the priority to the food aid, which is natural, then you are going to face a problem on the next crop if you don't get the fertilizer to the farmers on time.
With drought-caused crop failures ranging from 50 to 90% in parts of the country, Ethiopia, sub-Saharan Africa's biggest wheat consumer, was forced to seek international help and drastically increase its wheat purchases. The jam at the port has highlighted Ethiopia's dependency on Djibouti. Already, about 90% of Ethiopia's trade goes through Djibouti. That's 11 million tons of food. During the next 3 years, it is set to increase to 15 million tons. The type of demand that puts Ethiopia in a special regional position, according to those such as port official Dawit Gabraab, originally from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia is the locomotive for the whole region, I think. The reason being, because you have to look at the almost 100 million people living in Ethiopia. That's a huge consumer market. They need supplies, they need services. And this is a very good opportunity for the countries around Ethiopia to tap into this huge market, you know, and then, of course, vice versa.
As a result, Ethiopia has long been looking to reduce its dependence on Djibouti and been strengthening bilateral relations with neighbouring Somaliland. The most recent agreement stipulated about 30% of Ethiopia's imports shifting to Berbera port, which recently secured a deal to expand the underused and underdeveloped port. But according to the business people in Djibouti, Ethiopia's population growth is so high that it's going to need all the ports it can get, even those in Somalia and Sudan. As Abubakar explains, so many more trucks might not be needed if customs procedures could be sped up on the Ethiopian side.
There's too much bureaucracy. We are building and making very efficient, roads, railway, we are building bridges. But there is what we call invisible barriers, which is these documentations. They are relying too much on this revenue, you know, the government to function. Oh, we are at their mercy.
A new 756-kilometre railway running between Djibouti and Ethiopia was brought into service early in November 2015 with a daily train that can carry about 2,000 tonnes of food aid to alleviate pressure on the port.
James Jeffrey reporting from Djibouti. Teachers in Malawi have begun a nationwide strike to press home their demands for unpaid salaries, dating back as far as 2010. The teachers' union accuses the government of failing to keep a promise that they would hand over outstanding pay by the end of last month. And it's not just the teachers who are affected by this dispute. Chimwemwe Padatha begins his report by listening to what the pupils have to say.
We are always affected when our teachers hold strikes. This encourages immoral behaviour among learners as they come at school and end up doing other bad activities. I urge the teachers and government to resolve their grievances so that we can resume our classes.
Going on strike only fuels illiteracy levels in Malawi, and I encourage government to fulfill its promises in order not to infringe on the rights of students.
These children are among thousands of primary school pupils who have gone days without attending classes in Malawi since the beginning of the nationwide strike. Organizers of the sit-in strike, the Teachers Union of Malawi, feel that government has not done enough to address teachers' grievances, like paying their salaries in time. The president of the Teachers Union of Malawi, Chauluka Mwake, told DW that the union will not allow room for any form of discussions with the government unless it addresses their demands immediately.
If the government does not implement, the strike will continue. Schools are closing on the 15th. And if the schools close, the strike will remain. We will not open schools on 5 September. That's what is supposed to be there. So we just caution government not to infringe the rights of the children for education, because it has taken years for us discussing about these salary areas.
On his part, the spokesperson for the Ministry of Education, Manfred Ndovi, admits that economic challenges facing the nation have led to the delay in paying back the arrears owed to the teachers.
The salary arrears that were supposed to be paid were amounting to, the first lot was amounting to 103 million Malawi kwacha. And then this one was already certified by the National Audit Office. However, we were just waiting for the Department of Accountant General to honor that payment.
Ndovi also told DW that the teachers' arrears were not budgeted for in the current financial year, and it is doubtful whether the government will pay them in time.
We'll try our best to discuss with them to make them understand what we are going through and how we are going to assist the teachers, because these are our teachers and we still have their welfare at heart, so we cannot allow them to be suffering when they are helping us.
Benedicto Kondowe, the Executive Director for Civil Society Education Coalition, blames the government for not being proactive in addressing the teachers' concerns.
I would say that to a great extent, government is to blame, because some of the issues at least government could have demonstrated, and that could have perhaps given, you know, the teachers assurance that they have a government that is willing to deal with some of their issues. So we seem to have a government that is a bit careless in terms of the statement that it makes.
It should be recalled that the current strike comes days after an expiry of a June 30th deadline when government promised to address the teachers' demands.
Chimwemwe Padatha reporting.
Opinion.
And for opinion this week, we go back to our top story. A cleric in Zimbabwe, Evan Mawarira, has called for a total shutdown of the country today, urging everyone to stay at home. His call comes in the wake of a strike by government workers in Zimbabwe in protest at delays in the payment of salaries as tension over the country's struggling economy continues to mount. And this is what we would like to ask you. Could there be an Arab Spring-style revolution in Zimbabwe? Send us your opinion in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany, or in an SMS to country code 49160957 59510.
For more on Africa, go to our website at dw.com/Africa.
Our main stories here on Africa Link before we leave you. Protests and strikes are planned in Zimbabwe following a series of demonstrations over the struggling economy under veteran leader President Robert Mugabe. And picking up on a story we were following earlier in the week here on Africa Link, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is continuing his landmark tour of Africa with a visit to Rwanda. Remember, remember, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is feedback.africa@dw.com. As always, thank you for listening. Until the next time, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.